Let's face it, PBMs have a bad reputation. Is it deserved, or are they just misunderstood? We'll find out on this episode of Shift Shapers.
Change either paralyzes or energizes. The choice is yours. You're listening to the Shift Shapers podcast. You're about to learn firsthand from businesses and entrepreneurs who have successfully shaped the shifts in their industries. Get ready to become the change you want to see. This episode is brought to you by Shift Shaper Strategies. In sales, if you confuse, you lose. Clarify your message so you win more clients, crush your sales goals, and build your practice. Learn more at ShiftShaperStrategies.com. And now, here's your host, StoryBrand Certified Guide and Chief Transformation Strategist at Shift Shaper Strategies, David Saltzman.
You know, in our industry, a lot of PBMs have a bad reputation. And I'm sad to say that to a large measure, it's deserved, whether it's tactics that drive misaligned incentives or whether it's misaligned incentives that drive tactics, it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, consumers, health plan sponsors, others aren't getting a fair shake for a large measure in the pharmacy world. Now, that's starting to change, and we're glad to hear that because I think a lot of consumers have become involved. A lot of self-funded plans have now brought granular detail in terms of cost to the attention of employers and plan sponsors, and that's a great thing. Sunshine's the best disinfectant. Go ahead, be transparent, and then we can argue about all kinds of crazy things and hopefully improve the system. But we wanted to talk to somebody who's in the thick of changing it, and that's our guest today, Brian Butler, who's Vice President of Client Development at Flip. Brian, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Nice to speak with you again, and really looking forward to the time you've allowed me today on your platform.
Well, it's a pleasure. Give us a little bit of a quick tour through your background, just to kind of level set.
Sure. So I guess first and foremost, I grew up in Chicago. I chose Drake University for pharmacy school, so I now reside in Des Moines. So a Midwesterner, spent a good portion of my career actually as a pharmacist serving patients in the community. Really loved that, but also saw kind of the business model that's wrapped around that and didn't really want to participate in that. So was fortunate enough to land some positions through managed care companies. And so that's taken me on a really fun journey from small startup PBMs to really large organizations like Cigna, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and CVS, and really, you know, met a lot of wonderful, talented people that within many of those organizations may have had some frustrations with how care was or wasn't being delivered. And so I had the opportunity recently, about a year and a half ago, to join one of those organizations that's intent on disrupting status quo in the PBM space, and that's Flipped. And so, yeah, the majority, probably about 15 to 20 years in the managed care space, and, you know, deep desire to service clients and plan sponsors and stakeholders that are in alignment with driving that lowest cost for members and improved quality.
And we hear all kinds of anecdotal stuff about how bad this problem is. From the catbird seat where you sit, what's the scope of the problem? What are we dealing with here?
Yeah, I mean, at the highest level, when you think about the majority of employer-sponsored plans today, you have roughly, you know, $500 billion in drug spend, with approximately $100 to $125 billion of that retained by middlemen. And there's a variety of middlemen. It's not just PBMs. There's others that are, you know, egregiously capturing margin within that space. But at the highest levels, that's the significance of this. And when you step back and think about the role of a pharmacy benefit manager, actually very critical. It's one of the most visible components of healthcare delivery. Members use the pharmacy benefit frequently, and it's a real opportunity for a PBM to engage or not engage a member at time of, you know, that consumerism experience. And so it's really from that lens that you're trying to help a member make better decisions. So it's significant in dollars, not only to employers and their benefit spend, but it's also significant to communities. So let's take where I'm at in Des Moines, Iowa, right? So there's a lot of large employers here, Hy-Vee, Principal, huge health systems, that may or may not contract with, you know, the larger Buca plans, and a lion's share majority of that revenue generation happens outside of the state of Iowa. There's definitely solutions to lower drug costs that can really be in almost a sponsored community effort to drive that revenue back into local communities.
Just to kind of level set, you touched on this a moment ago. Who are some of the other players who may be eating margin but not necessarily delivering value?
Well, if you think about the global PBM market, 80% of that is roughly managed by the big three. So, you know, CVS, Optum, and Express Scripts, and they're either carrier owned or being owned by a carrier design. So the remaining players have, you know, a fraction of the market share, but still significant dollars in the space. And when you really narrow it down to the PBMs, there's a plethora of new innovative startup PBMs that have entered the space in the last couple years. Additionally, there's been some that I think have been true pass-through partners, and they've been around for decades and have had success. But at the end of the day, your success in the PBM space is ultimately limited by the competitiveness of the product you deliver, which in the PBM space is discounts for access to, you know, specialty and non-specialty drugs, and then any value creation that you leverage with employers, clinical programs to improve opioid abuse, you know, step therapy and prior authorization programs that may drive to a lowest net cost. I say may because not all step and prior auth are necessarily designed for that. They're designed for revenue generation. And then any other miscellaneous programs that you offer through your PBM to engage the member to help make smarter decisions. So when you think about the market share and the competitiveness in the space, it's increasingly difficult for those smaller players to keep up. It really is.
So I think for a lot of people, when they hear discount or rebate, what they hear is, we marked it up so we can mark it down. What are some of the tactics that are used that drive costs unnecessarily that you guys are seeking to change?
Yes, I think first and foremost is full pass-through of medicine-derived value. So you operate on a fixed admin fee. You don't generate any revenue, any margin, any spread on any drug products. And there's candidly not many PBMs that have designed their business model that way, because it's very tough to compete in a fixed admin fee world, right? So you have to have a large portion of your value proposition that's not tied directly to discounts. So I think that's first and foremost, is full pass-through of value. And then I think second, you have to have a unique way to educate consumers about true drug costs. And unfortunately, we've had some well-intentioned plan designs to reduce quote-unquote cost or cost share for a member. And I'll give you an example. So think about maintenance drug lists. So that would be, you know, a list of probably several hundred medications, primarily generic drugs that you use for chronic conditions, right? High cholesterol, high blood pressure, et cetera. Really cheap medications that your employer makes available to you as a member for zero cost share. And maybe they require you to use the home delivery unit of your PBM. Great for members. Well, not necessarily, because while that $0 out-of-pocket cost you share as the member, your employer still picks up that remaining balance. And that remaining balance changes drastically based on the site that you're actually going to procure that medication from, right? And the discounts or full pass-through of those discounts that either exists or doesn't exist. So back to the original point, unintended benefit. Great for me as a member to have no cost and improve my medication adherence and hopefully outcomes by not having cost share responsibility. But you've just removed me from that consumer experience. So now I think my $0 atorvastatin that I get at Walgreens, CVS, you know, Humana mail order, name your distribution partner, has no cost attached to it, when in fact it has a lot of cost. And it's really important for me as the consumer to think about, where am I going to fill this? It's one of the highest cost, perhaps, medications or portions of spend in the healthcare benefit. And number two, are there any alternatives? Meaning you walk into a provider's office, and I'll stick with the atorvastatin example, diet and exercise is not cutting it for you, going to have to start on a low-dose statin. Maybe they start you on Crestor. Crestor is a great drug. Do you really need Crestor in that case? Crestor is great to reduce LDL for really, the sickest of the sick folks. Any number of alternative statins, probably just as effective, but very different price points. And so we collectively, some intentionally, some unintentionally through the benefit design that I referenced before, have really masked the true price of a medication and removed me completely from that experience. And that's what we hope to change.
And now, a word from our sponsor. It's a fact. Salespeople and organizations lose opportunities because they don't clearly communicate their value. In today's market, your story is your message. It should be crystal clear, perfectly arranged, and precisely targeted to attract the clients you want. As a certified story brand guide, we use the exclusive SB7 process to create that story and the websites and collateral that deliver it. If your message isn't cutting through the noise, we can help. Visit us at shiftshaperstrategies.com to learn how we can help you find, clarify, and deliver a message that wins clients, crushes sales goals, and builds your practice. In sales, if you confuse, you lose. So learn more and schedule that call today at shiftshaperstrategies.com. That's shiftshaperstrategies.com. And now, back to our discussion.
But I mean, we look at that Kaiser study about healthcare literacy that comes out every year or every 18 months, and the numbers haven't changed in years. The vast majority of Americans still can't tell you the difference between a deductible and a copay or cost sharing or any of the other components in their plan. It seems like the hill you're describing that we have to climb in order to get consumers to the point where they are conscious about those questions and can make intelligent decisions is a really, really tall cliff. How do you get them there? What steps do you start taking, even baby steps, to help consumers be better at what they're doing with their drugs?
It's like if I step away from my pharmacy responsibilities and think about how does Brian consume other goods in the general universe, you can see where companies have shifted to really focus using technology to drive that right to the member, right? So I can activate a lot of things myself. We don't have, that does not exist in the pharmacy benefit today. And technology and the ability to scale that technology across multiple modalities, right? So David may have a smartphone and wants to text message. You may not prefer that. You may want to actually engage through an application. You may want to chat with a member that's available 24/7. So we have to deliver all of those in a connected way. So I think first and foremost is really leveraging technology to build a scalable solution and drive it directly to the member, give them some incentive to participate in this consumerism model. If you think about when we rolled out high deductible health plans, and where the adoption has gone over the past 10 to 15 years, I don't know if we can say that it's drastically improved outcomes because we really haven't given members the tools that they need to be very personalized. And I think that'll be one of the biggest changes you see in the PBM landscape is, and you're seeing it today, similar to the company I work for and others that I compete with that I actually hope do well because they're trying to do things different and innovate in the PBM space. They're leveraging technology to get to the consumer, no different than any other platform when you think about how we consume.
Right. But I mean, do we also need plan design changes? Because to use your example, if I'm a consumer, and I've got a choice of a Toyota Corolla, free, no copay, no nothing, or a Lamborghini, guess which I'm taking?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, how do you start educating employees? Is it plan design, or do you have to say to them, there is a difference between these two zero-cost drugs?
Yeah, it's absolutely plan design as well. And you have to give the member an incentive, a reason, a reward to participate in that process. Because absent that, they really don't have any motivation today to consider the true cost of a medication. Again, not your cost share, right? The actual full cost of medication A versus medication B. And potentially rewarding me for choosing that lower cost. There aren't many solutions that do that today.
So going all the way back, I mean, we talk about there are a lot of hands in the pot here. Everybody's trying to pick a pocket and get their little, a few cents worth along the way of the transaction. By the time you're done, it ends up to be billions and billions of dollars. What are the things that advisors and their clients should start looking for, especially if you have the luxury of being on a partially self-funded plan and you're designing it yourself? What are the things you want to bring to the table?
Yeah, I mean, that advisor, channel partner, subject matter expert really has to have some deep knowledge in pharmacy, or have a component of their organization that has some deep knowledge of pharmacy. So that's first and foremost. You know, second, you have to intake data and evaluate that. Like, you have to be able to look at the underpinnings of, you know, how utilization actually flows for an employer. What does their drug mix look like? What's their geographic footprint as far as where all those members sit and access to retailers they have? So that's very critical. But I mean, the higher points, you have to have a focus on specialty, obviously. That's driving half of the cost for most plan sponsors, some more than 50%. You definitely have to have a handle on the contracting process, right? There's a lot of, so, and let me back up. There's actually a publicly available research study done by Nephron Research. I just released it, I believe it was earlier this year. And it actually shows how profit pools for PBMs have changed since 2015. And so it identifies, I think it's 5 different profit levers, you know, spread margin, specialty distribution, you know, miscellaneous fees, and a couple other categories, and where those profit pools have changed. And so what you saw back in 2015 was a majority of PBMs really holding on to a significant percentage of rebates. And we've seen what's happened. Plan sponsors and their advisors have taken note, and they're paying more attention and they're digging in. So more of that value is being passed through. But PBMs are creative. Right, they're obviously going to generate another revenue stream or push it. And so where they've pushed it is to really 2 key categories. 1, fees. This is more tied to GPOs with the big 3. So you can see that there was a definite reason why they not only developed and built out those GPOs, but decided to redomicile them outside of the U.S. for a long-term strategy for revenue generations. That's a huge one. And then second is specialty. Like I mentioned before, you have to have a focus on specialty, because when you look at the gross to net cost for a branded drug, it's about a 50% differential. So you think about that Humira claim that's going to run $60,000 over the course of a year. The net cost where pharma really wants you to buy that at is $30,000. So you have a significant spread there that's driven through a lot of different tactics at PBMs and their own specialty units. That's really driving the majority of their revenue. And you don't have to listen to me. Go listen to any other earnings calls or, you know, the published statements, and you can see where those revenue generators are.
You mentioned, you know, advisors having somebody in their organization who's fluent in PBM speak, but a lot of advisors are still single shingle people. So
yeah.
Do they go and find an organization like yours or others to partner up with them to say, hey, you know, it's the kind of, I got a guy, you know, let me bring in my expert. I mean, because they can't do this themselves. This is way too esoteric for folks who are just on the street banging away at trying to help clients.
Right. I totally agree. You know, first of all, I'd welcome them to reach out to me, and not for me to give them any even specific guidance, but even refer them to some organizations and people, more importantly, that I trust that are, you know, students of the game, so to speak, and they want to pass that value back to employers. I think that's number one. And number two, yeah, you're absolutely right. You have to have some expertise or partner with an organization that has expertise, and there's plenty of them that are out there. The challenge, I'll be honest with you, and this isn't to call anybody out, is, you know, there's not always aligned incentives there. So if you look at some of the larger firms that may use, you know, coalitions, you know, there's all kinds of revenue generation that happens there. Some of those are really great solutions for employers, because you can pick that up off a shelf and kind of easily implement it. But that's not going to do anything to disrupt the revenue model going forward, which is what needs to happen. It's actually not needs to. It's what will happen in the PBM space. Absolutely. I have no doubts about that. You asked me about kind of, you know, market share, and you have all of these smaller, maybe technology companies that have started up in healthcare, generally speaking, not just PBM. It's such a fun time to be in healthcare and be a part of that momentum. Some of those will fail, and others will greatly succeed. And so it's organizations like us and the people I think that are listening in today and hopefully engage afterwards that can be part of that solution going forward. It has to change. It's not sustainable.
But there's no question. But again, the entrenchment of the misaligned incentives is so deep that it's a really, really tough nut to crack. We've got a couple of minutes left. Where do you see the future? How do you see this progressing? What does that time frame continuum look like to you?
It's going to happen rapidly. And then we're already seeing signs of it internally where you, and this is true of all size of employer. So your small 50 life groups to your major jumbo 50,000 plus life employers, and had some recent great success with some of those large organizations saying, you know what? I'm done with the status quo. This hasn't worked for the last 20 years. We haven't changed anything. We just keep dusting old products and solutions off the shelf and calling them something new. I need a disruptive solution. And so obviously, you know, the adoption curve, you're typically going to get those innovators and early adopters first. And they're taking advantage of these solutions today. So how I see this changing in the next 2 to 3 years is there'll be leakage, right, to those, you know, the laggard folks that just maybe for some good reasons can't implement that kind of change on their population right away, but they will eventually get there. So I think you'll see an uptick and increase in these unique, innovative point solutions within healthcare.
Well, it's past time. And I think, again, one of the things that may be pushing this is the renewed adoption of interest in self-funded or partially self-funded, pick your nomenclature, plans, especially in the mid-market. And because 10,000 life groups have been banging away at this for years, and they've mm-hmm. struck their own deals on the side that none of the rest of us know about. So I completely agree with you. And I think it's way past time. Brian Butler, VP of Client Development at Flip. Brian, we hope you'll come back in 6 months or a year and we can talk again and you can tell me how it's progressing.
I hope so. Thanks for the time today and really appreciate your audience and their time and willingness to care about a really important topic in healthcare. So thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.
The Shift Shapers podcast is a production of Shift Shaper Strategies and may not be reproduced or quoted in whole or in part without our express written permission. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.